To this day, everybody who was there says that Bernie would have gotten that big knife into Daddy's back if it hadn't been for Bud Carson. Bud had been in the office, too, when word came about the fight. But he was a little slower about getting out of the office because he had been in the process of locking up the gun cabinet at that moment and stayed long enough to finish, then ran out with the key ring still in his hand. It was a big key ring, the old-fashioned kind with about 30 heavy keys on it. When Bud came shoving through the crowd around the fight, Bernie had just pulled his knife and jumped to his feet. Bud saw right away that he would never have time to get between Bernie and Daddy's back, and he couldn't pull his gun and shoot with folks standing all around. So, almost without thinking, he said later, he did the only thing he could do. He threw the keys. Bernie was in mid-jump when the keys took him upside the head. Arnold Wilson, the barber, was there that day and told his customers for years afterward how those keys hit Bernie's head with a ching that sounded just like a cash register. Bernie yelped like a kicked dog and threw one hand to his bleeding forehead, but didn't drop the knife. In a second, Bud was through the line of spectators and pitched into Bernie like a bobcat. I've always said Bud could outfight any man in the country except my father, and back then he was younger and maybe even more spry than he is now. Anyway, he looked up to Daddy, and they were the best of friends. But I wanted more than that. I wanted to be the best woodsman in the county. I wasn't going to be satisfied with your plain everyday accomplishments, catching an unusually big bass now and then and the like. I was going to be just as much a scout as my namesake, the real Kit Carson. So I studied my Indian books, wore out Daddy and Bud, and worried the old men of the neighborhood nearly to death with questions. By the time I was 10, I could track as well as any grown man I knew. I could catch fish when everybody said it was too hot for them to bite, and catch good-sized ones, too. I knew how to twist a rabbit out of a hole with a forked stick, catch a possum with a snare, or rig a deadfall trap. I buried a groundhog skin in wood ashes to burn the hair off, then cut it into strips for shoestrings. I could shoot the eye out of a squirrel, and nearly always did. I liked hunting, but I couldn't stand to make an animal suffer, so I always waited to fire until I was sure I had a dead shot. Simmer Downs was my very best friend. He lived a mile and a half down Flat Creek from us, the other side of Star City. Simmer and I were friends because we lived closer together than almost any two of the other boys except the town boys, and because Simmer was just so easy to get along with. I'd thought about it a lot because he was one of the few kids I knew who never made me feel bad about being a runt. I'd decided that it was possible not to necessarily like Simmer, but nobody could really dislike him very much. Simmer was the most easygoing person I ever knew just about. He never did anything you could get mad at, except when you were mad or upset about something, and he wouldn't get mad or upset along with you. Seemed like he just couldn't be bothered to get excited about anything. That's why he was called Simmer. His real name was George, but he was so laid back that his daddy, who was a teaser, was always telling him to simmer down and be quiet. Mr. Downs usually said something like that when Simmer looked like he was already about to fall asleep sitting up anyway. Simmer was stocky, with a thick neck and a round head that seemed even rounder because he always kept his hair cut short and bristly. He was bigger than me, though we were only 6 months apart in age, but he never seemed to notice. That suited me just fine. One Saturday, when we were 12, Simmer and I were walking up the dirt road from the creek to my house. We were feeling pretty good about ourselves, loaded as we were, with a dozen fat bluegills and a big goggle eye on a willow switch stringer. We left our poles and lines up in the limbs of a sycamore tree beside the creek where we always did, so we didn't have to carry them back and forth to the house. It was one of those summer days when the world just seems all right around you like a shirt that fits with nothing binding or rubbing you. It seemed that the afternoon would never get by, but finally Daddy sent Simmer and me to hitch up Henry and Henrietta, the big-footed plow horses, to the wagon. We forked some hay in the back because there was only enough room on the seat for two or three people, and we wanted to ride comfortably. The ride to town was a lark, except that we had to stop at Bernie Sloan's house to serve a summons on him. Sloan's house was a ragged, log-and-board shack with cracked window panes and a sagging front porch roof. The yard was scratched bare by chickens and dogs. One rake-ribbed hound raised his head to look at us from his resting place on the porch, but didn't bother to bark. He seemed as shiftless as his owner. "I wish Daddy hadn't stopped here," I groaned. "You'd think he'd be in a hurry to meet this prison man and get the manhunt started." Simmer and I were sitting at the very back of the wagon box, our bare feet hanging down. He lay back in the hay and looked up at the puffy clouds in the late afternoon sky. Look at the bright side, Kit. Maybe Eddie'll come out and go to picking on us. Then we can get your daddy to shoot him." Daddy walked hollering all around the barns and sheds, but got no reply. Finally, he found Bernie hiding in the chicken house and gave him the legal paper. I didn't know what the paper was about. Probably Bernie's own chicken house wasn't the only one he'd been spending time in.